Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Mitigation Williams.
Mitigation?
I'm trying to think what is a way we can, what is something in between what's been going on and all this. It was a stretch.
Yeah.
It's late. It's been a long week so far. You know, but it's Spencer Williams, everybody.
Yeah, I'm here, as always.
And also with us, as always, well, not as always, because she comes whenever she wants and then leaves. Yeah, well, you know, it's like, you know, this intern is just inconsistent. But speaking of which, we have intern Amy with us again.
I am inconsistent, but at least I'm polite. Oh, my gosh. Bye.
Sure, while you're playing with a rapper at the table.
It's not hold on, hold on, there's music. No one can hear me over the music.
We got a great show in store as we will be discussing Netflix's recent drop on their film list, and that is Malcolm and Marie. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Spencer, give them that official synopsis goodness.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We have over, what is it now, over 250 episodes?
Yes.
Yep.
We are up there, man. We are definitely up there in terms of the episodes. And you can check us all out at our website at filmlosophers.com. This past week, well, 2 weeks ago, we did the best and quote-unquote worst of 2020. Mm-hmm. So that was a really fun conversation. I think that was the last time you were on.
Yes. I made space so that you guys could do The Invisible Man. Because we spoke about it on the 2020 episode, I went, no.
I wish I had listened to you, honestly.
I was right. I am vindicated.
If you don't know what we're talking about, check out last week's episode, episode 252, where we talk about The Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. That was a very interesting conversation, and it really delved into a lot of different things that I don't think either of us expected to get into.
Nope, definitely did not.
But... you know what? We are here now, and we're excited because, like I said, we are here to celebrate and talk about the recent film release out of Netflix, and that is Malcolm and Marie. This movie is a very interesting movie as there's literally only two performers in the entire film, and it takes place within one home. So it does that... 12 Angry Men thing again that we talked about
with a little more space.
But just like with Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and One Night in Miami, we're getting a lot of that, you know, tense, you know, cooped up feeling emotion moments. So we got a great show as we're going to be discussing that. But before we do, Spencer, give him that official synopsis goodness.
A filmmaker returns home with his girlfriend following a celebratory movie premiere. As he awaits what's sure to be imminent critical and financial success, the evening suddenly takes a turn as revelations about their relationship begin to surface, testing the strength of their love.
That's right. Directed and written by Sam Levinson, the film stars, as we said, only two performers, and that is John David Washington and Zendaya. If you're not
Zendaya,
it's kind of the same.
It doesn't have an I.
How do you know?
Zendaya.
How do you know it's pronounced that way?
Because I've absolutely heard her say it three or four times.
Isn't this like a stupid thing of English where sometimes Y can be pronounced like I, but only if you really feel like it?
Yep.
This is why I'm against the English.
So it's moot. Your argument is moot.
Well, no.
No, he's technically validating both our arguments and simultaneously not. He is the mitigator, as you've stated.
A couple of quick notes about the film.
Wait, we forgot something that we need to mention. There's one more performer in this. There's macaroni and cheese.
So moving on with this film, there's a couple little key things that we wanted to bring up, a couple little pieces of trivia. One is actually the age difference between the two actors. That was a really big conversation thing for everybody because the last thing that anybody really saw Zendaya in was ultimately the Spider-Man sequel. Greatest Showman was prior to that. Amy got that confused look over there.
I'm always perplexed. We've established this.
The difference between the two was 12 years. So John David Washington was 35, or is, I don't know if he's, and Zendaya is 23. So Zendaya actually refuted the criticism by saying people are, quote unquote, not ready, end quote, to see her as an adult, which I have to agree. To be quite honest, knowing that she was going to be in this movie, the only frame of reference that I knew of her was the two Spider-Man films and The Greatest Showman. That's it. And in both of them, she looks like a child. So it's you know, hit or miss for me. I wasn't too sure. John David Washington, you and I, Spence, had just recently saw, well, not recently, but within the last 6 months, Tenet,
yeah,
which kind of was this huge breakout role. One of them, aside from Black Klansman, the Spike Lee film, he's the one who pretends to be the white guy that connects with the KKK. Hmm. So, yeah, it's really interesting to see both of them becoming more and more in tune with who their performers, like their true performances are. And this is one of those pieces where, as we get into, they actually delve into some serious topics and conversations. Another unique thing about the film, one of the first films, this is one of the first films to be written, directed, and completed during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Dang.
So,
get it, Sam.
Seeing as they were able to do all of that, and then now that you know that, it kind of makes a lot more sense that it was just those two in a house for the whole film. So that's just really interesting. But talking about Malcolm and Marie, this is a very word of warning. This is a very triggering movie for people who are unaware. Mm-hmm. This movie does consist of a lot of relational issues and arguing and just berating and belittling and disparaging to each other during the course of that.
There's emotional and verbal abuse in this that's easily apparent, and it's, if you have been recovering or working through any type of relational, regardless of it being partner to partner, familial or otherwise, this will set you on edge. You will notice things, and you will most likely have maybe an opinion very similar to mine come the end of this thing.
And mind you, we say this just because as we talk about this film, we are going to be bringing those things up. This is going to be a spoiler-filled review because honestly, there's not really much that's... You're not watching this movie for how it ends. You're watching it for how the journey goes. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of those movies where we're going to talk about it because it is. It's a very, very sensitive and very poignant topic and... you know, conversation piece, especially for a film to, you know, present during this time. You know, so I'll get into more of that in a little bit, but expectations. What were some of your expectations for this film, Spence? Because I honestly had no clue.
No, same. Like, because basically what I did was I was like, how old is Zendaya when I first saw that she was in this movie? And I was like, oh, okay, well, I've seen creepier pairings, so that's fine, I guess.
Ooh, true.
Yeah.
I can't disagree on that front, though. That's
like, 12 years, I'm like, eh, like, you're in different life spaces, but whatever. but honestly, more other than that, I was like, okay, let's go.
You want me to make it creepier for you?
Why?
He was hitting puberty when she was born.
I mean... Like, I've heard of pairings where, like, oh, I was just born. Well, I'm going to college. Like,
yeah.
Okay, let's keep this train rolling. I don't like where it's staying. So, any expectations? Anything at all? Did you do any reading? Did you see any trailers?
I don't even think I saw the trailer. I think I literally just saw, like, this is coming to Netflix. I'm like, all right. And I was like, oh, it's in black and white. And that was pretty much all I got. So, I was like, I'm ready for a ride. Let's go.
Same. Yeah. I pretty much am in the same boat. If you would have said anything at all, I would have said you beat me because I did not see a single thing about this movie. I wanted to go in blind just because Netflix kind of has a unique flair to create every now and then an actually good emotional film.
not just one that's funding Adam Sandler's like vacations.
Yeah, exactly. Hubie Halloween can go to HE Double Hockey Sticks. But this movie, just from the photos in itself, just from like you said, I just saw it from the Netflix when I was passing by. Yeah. It evoked a lot of emotions, and the trailer, the little pieces I saw, it kind of reminded me a bit of Roma, and I liked Roma.
Oh, yeah.
Chad did not like it. He thought it was boring as all get out, but I really liked it. You know, I you know, one could say it's kind of racist because I'm Hispanic and he's white, but either way, it's a Hispanic movie all in Spanish and black and white. But needless to say, I'm just kidding. Honestly, I had no clue as to how the temperament of this film was, how the emotional, you know, range it was going to kind of sweep through. I had no idea of what I was getting into, to be quite honest. And to be totally transparent, we were thinking of movies for this week, and we're like, you know what? Because we are honestly like sitting, flying by the seat of our pants. That's what it is. I can get it too. Sometimes.
Sitting by the seat of your pants is exactly. An option as well.
You know, I mean, we are in quarantine. The honest thoughts were we wanted to do something that not only was indicative of honoring Black History Month, but we also wanted to do something that was relevant and current and something that spoke of now in the current time. And seeing two people in a film that literally are just by themselves kind of evokes that quarantine mindset. So we jumped on that and we're like, all right, we're going to do it. And yeah. Amy, what were some of your expectations?
Well, I beat everybody at the table because I saw the trailer not once, but twice because it came through my Instagram feed. Go figure. To be very honest, I didn't want to see this movie, like, at all. Because I saw the trailer and it's, we'll talk about it, but it's after they've gotten back and they start having the first initial, like, I'm not mad at you. Nothing's going to be coming out of this tonight. I want to go to bed. Leave me alone. Like that sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, nope. And he's like, I know I can see when something's wrong. And she's like, no, you can't. You're not paying attention. And I was just like, no, thank you. I was like, oh, in black and white, it looks really nice in black and white. It's a lot clean. It's like a super clean and all the, like the contrast. That's great. And then I'm like, still don't want to see it. So going in, I knew that I was going to have some type of a difficulty with it. I was hoping for the best,
mm-hmm.
Not preparing for the worst. I just literally was hoping for the best. So kudos to me, I'm being the optimist that I am.
Hmm. And kudos to you to being the only person who actually did any kind of prior research on the film, because like I said, we didn't see a single thing.
It literally came into my Instagram feed twice.
I remember seeing it and then I saw it a couple seconds and click next one. Like I didn't want to stay on it because I didn't want to see anything without a proper trailer. Like I don't, Netflix always shows like
a little bit
20 deep. Seconds of like the most randomest part of the entire movie and you're like,
no, that's what, how are you, I watched a Monster Calls.
You only saw 20 seconds of it.
Yeah, and it was I saw the entire movie. Okay, Monster Calls,
what I'm saying is,
but the 20 seconds that they showed on Netflix was so much better than the trailer. That is the problem. If that had been the trailer, mwah.
That is but one movie out of hundreds of other movies that Netflix puts out constantly.
Willoughby.
So anyway,
basically, I saw it. Did not want to see it. I'm still here. Huh.
So, first impressions, and since it sounds like you're already about to burst, why don't you give us your first impressions of the film as soon as it was over? Okay, eyes wide, holding your breath.
Am I allowed to swear?
Do you have to fart?
No, am I allowed to swear? I had to think about that for a minute.
Sure.
No, I'm asking honestly if I'm allowed to swear. I'm getting a sheep or something put over my swearing.
Whatever.
What the fuck? Like... I hope you're marking this. Holy shit. What the f***? Like, no. No. Circle. Why? My God. You started just literally just circle. Like, no. Go. Last song. What the hell? Wait, oh, I can do spoilers. So the last song really kind of summed up everything, and it was just basically a...
Well, why don't we wait till we actually talk about the film before you get into spoilers? I know you want to do the review on your own on that side of the table, but you're on it. There's a group here.
So, okay? The fuck? Oh, sorry. Spencer, help! you're not prescient. First thought thing. Yeah, go.
Really, it was mostly just confusion of, like, I do not understand these two people, like, 100%. And I don't know why they're together fully. Like they are both just so all over the place and chaotic that I'm like, this seems just bad for both. Like, yeah, it seems like you've done some good things for each other, but maybe, you know, just stop and split up and go your own separate ways.
Yeah.
While, like, one of you isn't dead or whatever.
Or trying to kill each other or control each other.
One of the things right after the film, one of the things I told Spencer today, that this film, the first impression I had as soon as this film was done, I immediately thought, you know, this is a artistic and very stretched version of the wonderful music video from Eminem and Rihanna. The song is called Love the Way You Lie.
Yeah.
It's literally that entire music video stretched out for an hour and 55 minutes and put in black and white.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know. It's more emotional fire.
Yeah, exactly.
It was trash fires of emotion.
Oh my God.
And the really long Bic lighter. Macaroni and cheese and really long household Bic lighters.
Yeah, I was like, this must be like a sponsorship with everything that's in the kitchen, because nobody eats Kraft mac and cheese.
Basic people do.
Oh, I'm basic, and you're wearing the mac and cheese shirt. We have acknowledged who the hierarchy is. I am of the barrel.
Time out. You actually like the boxed mac and cheese?
I do it the classic way, so it's full of fat. Like, I add
the classic.
Like,
what is the classic way?
So
does it take away the powder? Because it still has powder.
A little bit of a tangent. Yes, tangent? It has. There, it's a side. We're going off on a tangent about asking about how I make my macaroni and cheese out of a box.
Because it's out of a box.
Yes,
and it's made with powder.
Yeah, it's
that's really
cheese.
The only thing there to it. Like, I don't like. I don't like those.
I'm
little...
gonna secret him macaroni and cheese one of these days. No. And he's gonna be like, I know what this is.
No. Be like, oh boy, we're gonna have that talk. But
mac and cheese talk.
Yeah, the
apparently
talk
that, my interning does not extend to macaroni and cheese.
She's gonna come by, give me the mac and cheese. I'm like, you're quitting, aren't you? She's like, yep.
this is my fine. This is my 2 weeks is a bowl of macaroni and cheese.
But in all honesty, this movie is
trash fire.
It's not
a
so
beautiful
much...
trash fire. Okay, we can't stop watching it. That is something.
Hey, just hold the phone there over there.
There's a phone?
Yeah. Huh. Put your mouth on it. Just the idea that this movie was created within the sense of everything around it. The pandemic was going on. Quarantine was going on. The fact that they decided to make a movie about two people who are absolutely about to kill themselves and they're in a house together alone kind of seems like it's the irony in it does not, you know, past me. I see that, but this movie just seems like a very, very poor taste example of the quarantine.
Literally, he looks across the table. Spencer is the medicator. He is the middle.
You're the medicator, apparently.
Medicator?
That's what you said.
I said the mediator.
Mediator.
My goodness. Okay. You looked across the table at me and I'm thinking and I'm like, okay, if I take this as it was filmed during the pandemic and everybody's trapped, nobody can go anywhere and we're all islands unto ourselves. And then we have time to really dissect, take apart our relationships. And then because, oh, well, we're in a pandemic, we're all still stuck together. That's way too deep for me to go on focusing on that. I was just trying to focus on the movie as in and of itself of the
relationship.
Relationship, because if I start applying the outside world, like what's going on in the outside world, and then focus it in on the inside, I'm gonna like really have strong aggressive feelings about this movie.
Well, and that's the thing. I think this particular film it's meant to evoke those emotions from you. This movie is one of those types of movies where they purposefully do stuff so that they can try to make you as upset as possible, make you as sad as possible, make you as mad as possible, make you feel safe in a microsecond that they think everything is going well, and then amp it back up to 100. It's like military torture on screen. Like, that's what it is, essentially. Now, the idea behind it is sound. The idea that, you know what, okay, two people who, some innocuous night, you know, of celebration seem to go well, and then just secretly one of them is just seething because of whatever reasons and so forth. That sounds like a good idea. The directions this thing took and the depths that they went in terms of, like, the verbal abuse, that was harsh. Like, this movie really kind of, it took the words away from me for how much this film bugged me. But at the same time, kind of like Amy's beautiful trash fire, it's one of those things where, you know, it's burning down and it's gonna cause damage, and it's just like this entire chaotic thing, but it's like, huh, I can't look away. Like, that's what it was for me. Like, after I saw the film, I seriously was staring at my screen for another good, like, 5-10 minutes, trying to make sense of if I liked this movie or if I didn't like this movie. Like, I'm not one to usually have to ponder about that so much after, but sitting there and looking at it, I'm like, I hate the way this movie made me feel, but I love the way this movie made each other express, if that makes any sense. Like, the dynamic of these two characters getting to a point where you're like, it's like it's seeing two volatile things, like two volatile chemicals, evolve and evolve and evolve into all these different elements and things like that, and then you just see them kind of just fizzle out at the very end. So I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
Really, that sigh says a lot.
100%. I was just like, yes. Like, I'm aggressively shaking my head over here, like, yes, yes, all day. Do, yes.
Because, like, the thing is, like, the fights in the movie, that is, like, each time there was a fight, like, at some point during the middle of it, I just, like, hit down on my controller so I could see how much time was left, and I'd be like, this isn't the last fight. There's no way.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
I was doing that the entire movie because I'm like, can we learn something? And, like, each time they got to a point where, like, okay, things are fine. And I'm like, there's too much time left for this to really be true.
Yeah.
And then, like, one of their faces would just change, and you're like, here we go again. And, like, you bring up a good point of, like, you know, liking this movie, because, like, once the movie was over, I was like, okay, well, I'm done thinking about this for a while. And then, like, I really didn't come back to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, this movie, like, it just hits you, like, really hard. I wasn't really expecting that going in. Maybe that's my fault for not watching the trailer, but so be it. But, yeah, like, just the arguments that these two people were making, like, it was weird how someone could make a good point and it also be the wrong thing to do at the same time.
Yeah.
Which was also just mind-boggling to me. It's like, you're right, but you are just going about this the wrong way to where you're a jerk now. And, like, you, like, I'm not a counselor or anything, but I'm like, this is not seem like the right way to express yourself. And I'm bad at doing that, so you must be horrible
at this.
That's
true. That's very true.
Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome.
At least it's a vote of confidence that you are better than the trash fire that was on.
That is true.
I'm better than two fictional people.
Yep. Yep. Two people in a house playing pretend. Like,
I'm not going to lie. Oh. Two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of the way into the movie, I honestly thought it was going to go in a completely different route. Because there's a scene where, and we'll get into that, where she appears with a knife.
Ooh, and that knife scene.
It was happening the entire time. Like, if no one was aware of it. So we'll talk about that sequence. But because I'm hyper-detail-oriented, every click, every tap, like,
Every major scene had some
had an
indication
element
that
the
knife was
somewhere.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the beginning to the end.
She was cutting butter. Yeah, she was opening. She threw it on the countertop and it like watched it slide across the counter. Mm-hmm. When she's moving in and out of the kitchen, she's slamming things. She's putting things away. Like you keep seeing sharp objects and it was created. It was just enough because I'm dumb detail oriented. I'm like,
So let's just dive into this because I kind of want to just jump into these conversations. And as I mentioned, two warnings, obviously spoilers and be aware trigger warnings if you know somebody who has been in situations like that. So just a word of warning. One of the unique things about this movie that I really appreciated right from the get-go was that opening scene. The opening scene where they come in and you immediately know there is a difference between these two characters. As soon as these two walk into the door, one goes left and then the other one goes right. And the demeanor when they're walking in is completely different. And he's excited. He's all jovial. He's, you know, happy and celebratory and he's putting music on and she's just in the kitchen and she's doing some stuff and she's obviously getting apparently his mac and cheese ready. But you hear him talking nonstop incessantly. And she's just standing there and she has a cigarette and she's just, you know, there. And it's like the juxtaposition between these two characters right from the get go really kind of set the stage and the tone for what is to be expected for the film to come. Because you have Zendaya, who, like we said, has previously just been portrayed as a younger girl, if not a teenage girl, or I don't even know how old she was in The Greatest Showman, but a young woman. And you have her pitted against somebody like John David Washington, whom, like I said, we've seen him prior to this. And, you know, right from the get-go, you do recognize the age difference. Like, it is immediate. She is young. She seems a lot more... Her face seems a lot more innocent. She seems a little bit more youthful. And it's a mismatch right from the get-go. But once the words start flowing, Zendaya kind of leads with the best of them in this movie. I really have to give her credit, because for all the expectations that I had of her in this movie, she really excelled and, you know, went beyond what I thought she could do. Like, I thought the best she could do was MJ from Spider-Man. I didn't really like her role in The Greatest Showman. But I'm not familiar with her outside of that. But Amy, you actually are aware of some of her roles aside from just the ones.
Because I have children, but yes. Because she was and so her comment about people not being ready to see her as a woman, as an adult, kind of probably ties into the fact that she was a Disney Channel star. So the first exposure that I saw of her was when my oldest daughter was watching her on, like, there was a dance. They were part of like a dance show where she was like all dancing, and it's her and another girl that's now an up and another actress trying to get past the goody two shoes, the Mickey Mouse Club type of mentality. So she was more comedic, more like type of personality in seeing that. When I saw The Greatest Showman, that was a very big step from where I had seen her. So I'm like, okay, she has acting chops, but it's not going to be kind of displayed the way it is. I had mentioned prior that her MJ role is like, hey, sup. Like, that's literally how they've treated MJ in that universe. And it's really frustrating. And then seeing her in this, it was very pointed, very articulated. She was fearless. I purposely did not see her as, oh, she's that kid. Because I understood in the role that she was in, she's a grown-ass woman. And she's in this relationship. It doesn't matter if there's like a, oh, she looks like a kid. There's models that look just like her that are in their 30s and their 40s. So it doesn't matter. But she really did excel. She, every breath, every movement, every tick, every like flare of her nostrils, every blink, every thought panned across her face in all the moments that you needed it to and when you didn't need it to. and it translated effortlessly.
Was it just me, or and mind you, I'm not trying to make fun of her. I think it actually added to the character that she was. But was it just me, or did her face seem like one side was a little bit more slack than the other? Like, it just seemed like one eye was just always like the.
Yeah, no, she doesn't have a symmetrical face. She's asymmetrical, but you notice it more when she went from her glam Hollywood outfit to taking off the eyelashes, and then after she gets out of the tub, gets out of the tub, and she's wiped all of the makeup off her face, you notice that her face is not fully symmetrical.
Yeah.
And then you also see that she looks even younger than when she was at the beginning.
Yeah.
Which it's like,
but by that point she's already kind of opened up her guns and like really let him have it at this point in time, which I think helps because of the fact that at this point I don't see her as the actress as before, because she's already proven she can, you know, she can throw with the rest of them. The fact, though, that look that she has, it's like a perpetual sense of doubt in him. And it starts from the beginning all the way through. I don't think I've ever seen it let up. Even in the moments where there's a sense of brevity and they're trying to kind of come together on the same page, she still has that like sense of doubt. And it's like, that is such a unique physical choice to make for your body language as an actress, because obviously we're all aware some people have RBF. We've talked, you know, that's let's just say that's a thing. And because of that, some people just in their natural way of expressing, it just comes off as like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? Who made you upset? Who, as my dad used to say, who peed in your Cheerios?
That's
I'm not lying.
Spencer's like,
no. That's what he used to say. The idea of people who have this type of face, it just always seems like something's wrong. Her natural face isn't like that. But in this movie, every time she was conscientious of her physical appearance on screen, her face had that slack-eyed, high-brow, one brow higher, slack, you know, very, very critical, very, like, doubtful of the situation. Not just him, but of the situation. Was such a very smart and unique way for her to do that. It was such a unique choice for her. I don't think I've really ever seen a transformation like that from somebody who I'm used to being kind of put off by, because I'm not a big fan of hers. I'm just gonna be honest, I'm not a big fan of hers. But in this movie, I could see the potential of being a fan of hers if this is something that is going to continue in terms of her abilities, her acting abilities. But I just, that face kind of stuck with me throughout the whole movie. It was almost like a haunting kind of thing, because seeing her struggle with the security of whatever they have slash had, because the ending is kind of nebulous, and we'll talk about that. Whatever they are in at the moment does not seem to be on solid foundation. And we see how that house, that, you know, emotional house, continues to topple through the entire film. I don't know. What did you think?
I actually really liked her facial performance during
the
movie.
Okay. I wasn't the only one.
Yeah, because like, from the get-go of the first question is like, is something wrong? And she says no. I was like, you're lying. Because like her face is just telecasting to everybody what like is kind of going on. And like, yeah, he was right. Like, there's something up. And again, he went about it the wrong way with incessantly badgering someone. Like, such bad choices. But like, her like acting choice, like, just for her character, like, was pretty solid throughout this whole movie. Plus, it was like, sometimes I feel like I'm really bad at reading people, and this is like her words is actually really great.
Well, to
be
honest,
like,
if we're being honest, yeah, you do have a little bit of difficulty, but if you would have missed this one, I would have had to have you go to the optometrist, get your eyes checked.
We're reviewing a movie, not reviewing each other, okay?
We are always reviewing each other.
And I am the bottom of the barrel because of my macaroni and cheese.
Very true. This movie, one of the unique things, and I want to ask your guys' honest opinion. What were you guys' thoughts on the movie being in black and white? Like, I get it. It's an artistic thing. But at the same time, it also seems kind of like a cliche thing. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts, Amy?
I actually felt that this was a better vehicle to dictate focus as well as control light. Mm-hmm. Not complete. Like, if I bring up Rashomon, I'm like, Rashomon is just amazing for
but
light.
It's, but it's, also, it's an older movie.
It's older, but it's also they were working with natural light. Versus in this space, we have a, because of the house and the way it's designed, you're able to control the light. You're able to do what you need, putting them in black, in white, swapping it so that you're never really, your grays are always muted whites kind of thing was interesting. I actually thought that it was a good choice because for me, if I had been, I would have started getting hyper aware of all of the other accessories in the background and not focused on the performances. Mm. So like when we get to the sequence where Malcolm, I had a moment there. I was like, oh no, I forgot their names. I was like, sorry, people.
Just call him Mac and her cheese, okay? Yeah.
Gosh, that's terrible.
Mac and cheese.
So Malcolm has just read his review. It's just been published. And Marie is laying on the couch, which is, you assume it might be like an off-white couch. She's wearing all white.
Which, mind you, the review is posted 2 hours after they get home, or an hour after, shortly after they get home. So they got home late, and then they're still up arguing.
And
at this
they
point.
Had been arguing for 20 minutes prior to understanding that it had actually gotten up.
There's that we know of.
There's an entire thing that goes on, and I was like, oh, I do stuff like that. That's hilarious. But in that sequence, he goes off on this very large monologue rant about the filmmaking artists, critics, the politics of movies, the trying to define someone's sexuality as a filmmaker and how you are trapped within your sexual identity and people hold it against you within the community of filmmakers and apply it to you negatively and positively, and how it, like, he goes on this big huge rant. There are great little bits in there, and a lot of it you're just like, dang homie, calm down. But so in black and white, the framing of this shot, we see he's out in the backyard, the doors are open, and she's laying along the she's on the couch, but she's laying kind of almost upside down on the bottom, or the bottom third of the frame. And so it gives this stark contrast of both of them, where he's outside and she's inside. So you can see and focus on them. Now, if that had been in color, we're looking at whatever light was catching off the pillows, the blankets, the chairs, the grass, because there was some light that was coming in from outside, you would see all of that. And my brain would lose me trying to focus on him and his rant, because he was mostly in darkness and she was white, like she was lit. And then he'd come in, say whatever, and then go back out. And so I think it was utilized as a tool to maintain focus on the issues and also create that additional walled in space or feeling like you get when you watch 12 Angry Men.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. I feel like if the movie is engaging enough, you don't have to worry about losing the focus of the audience.
But what if you're trying to hyper focus them in on things so that they start feeling anxious and start questioning themselves and seeing themselves in characters and everything?
Well, because
do you feel that's capable of being done concisely in a color film?
100%. It's actually been done before. There's a movie that came out not too long ago, a horror movie called The Strangers. The Strangers takes place.
Something I could see.
No, not at all.
That explains a lot right there why I don't watch it.
This movie, though, takes place in a house, and it's two people. You know, and they're kind of, there's these people who are wandering around the house, but these two people are inside the house trying to barricade and keep the house from getting broken into and them getting hurt. But the idea of the film, because the film is so engaging and you're focused on the two characters' survival and you're hoping that they don't get hurt, your focus does tend to fine-tune itself and hone in on these two particular people, because you are fixated on the drive of these two characters. You're fixated on the purpose, if you will. I don't know if the color aspect of the film would have taken away. I do think, though, on the mindset of production budget and maintaining like a consistent color palette for everything, keeping everything black and white is pretty much the easiest way you can go to be like, all right, we don't have anything, so just the green couch there, red couch there. Let's do this pink and yellow vase here.
I mean, don't you have to at least slightly cut? Because that's still going to be different shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that would still, like... Because, like, if I saw, like, a very odd shade of gray, I'd be like, what color is that supposed to be? Like, I feel like I would still question what color that's supposed to be, even if it's, like, a hot pink couch.
Did you notice any of the ones in the film?
I noticed they had couches that appeared to be white.
Nothing else? The vases that were by the couches, where the stereo was at, anything along the windows,
the bottles,
over in the kitchen, the pans,
the leaves that were imprinted into the windows, moved along. See, but the that was something that I think in your horror movie reference, you're focusing that your emotional attachment as a viewer is hinging on their survival. This one, when it comes to people talking about feelings, especially things that are uncomfortable, most people will go, okay, no, and just turn it off if they're not engaging. And maybe this was a way that the director was trying to ensure that we would still maintain focus and become invested.
Mm-hmm.
And maintain that. What do you think, Spence?
I think it was kind of an artistic choice, really. Because, like,
But according to you, was it the right choice? That's the biggest thing.
It was just a choice. I mean, this isn't a movie that is hinging upon colors of things. So, like as long as your movie is not that, it's fine if you want to have your movie in color or in black and white. Like, if it's, like, some sort of fashion, like, movie where it's, like, show off this beautiful dress and it's in black and white, I'm like, that's probably the wrong move.
Do you know what color Zendaya's shirt? Dress.
Her dress was Was it gold? Please be gold.
No, I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
I was thinking the tone, gold.
It would have been a gold.
That was literally the first. Because
silver would have been the other. Like, it would have taken a little bit more off the top if it had been all silver. But
that was actually one of the first questions that I had because of this movie. Because it was in black and white. Because I'm like, there's a lot of emphasis on this dress. What color is it? What color? Why? Apparently, it's a nice dress because it's apparently a sexy dress or whatever. But it's like, if this is a sexy dress and it's like vomit green, I don't think that's very sexy.
The emphasis of the color. It was the emphasis, just like when you're trying to make somebody, like, you're going, I am a woman, look at me, you wear something parallel to that. He doesn't go
parallel to what
you wear something parallel to the cultural stereotypical ideas of sexuality that pertains to females. So you wear something that has a high slit that exposes your chest, your neck, your back, your, like, her dress essentially was exposing her as a woman, and it was supposed to be like, is it lith or leith? L-I-T-H-E. Lithe?
Huh. What are you trying to...
I'm trying to figure out the word, basically to talk about light. It's almost like light air, not light airy, but it gives her more of that mysterious seductress type of vibe. The dress does in and of itself. It didn't matter the color, it was the way that it was fit to her that he's like, you're the most beautiful woman, I keep looking at you, and you're the most beautiful creature, you're the most beautiful woman, you're the sexiest. Like, he keeps saying all of those things. And then when you see her later, and she's just out and chilling in her stuff.
So in a perfect world, yes, that would be correct. But we don't live in a perfect world.
We've never lived in a perfect world. What shenanigans is this? This is not Minecraft. People, there's scary things in there.
Are you done? Several people find sexy in different ways. Not just in visually appealing. Sometimes in the texture, sometimes in the way that it, the color of it, sometimes in the way, however it is. So I don't just think it was the way the dress looked. I feel like there's an amalgamation of different things to it. And that's why it was top of mind for me of like, well, I need to know what color this dress was. It
turns out the color of the dress is?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
So it was that pressing to find out.
I had to write notes for this show, okay?
You have put an emphasis about the
intern
color
doesn't do diddly here, so I am doing all the notes myself.
I feel attacked.
This is not the movie to be attacking people.
That is true. But that aside, the film kind of explodes into this massive downfall of these two particular individuals and their relationship and the way they view the relationship. And to be quite honest, it gets pretty ugly, like very fast. And it's kind of jarring because you get these moments in the film where the simplest request or the badgering, as Spencer said earlier, of the boyfriend or from, well, John David Washington to Zendaya, it does kind of wear on her and it evokes this response. You know, she does say in the beginning, you know, you don't want to do this tonight. Let's not do this. You know, let's just go to bed. It's late. And he badgers her more to get the response that he wants. And it turns into this huge, like, cavalcade of just insults and hurt words and mean things and deprecating verbiage that just really would turn any normal person's stomach inside out. But it's interesting how explosive it gets right away. And I think that's one of the things that I feel, because this film was done during quarantine, how the poor taste kind of thing comes in. Because let's be honest, quarantine was crazy from March 13th all the way through until almost like August, September. Everybody had to be in their homes. You either were working from home or you had to stay in your home. And I'm more than certain that people were on the verge of wringing other people's necks in their home. And I feel like this choice to go in this direction with this film kind of skirts that line of going beyond just the simple homage and just kind of being ironic with it. I don't know. What do you think?
Spencer?
First off, the dress. It is metallic and pewtered color.
Yeah, so it was silver. Hmm. Isn't that what you said?
Pewter is silver. You're good.
Good.
So that's that.
There we go.
So anyway, yeah, no, I heard of like the phenomenon of quarantine divorce, which, you know, the quarantine probably didn't help things, but like, I mean, it's an interesting thing to commentate on because it was a moment in society that like people were actually living, but I also feel like this might be a bit too recent. But yeah, that wasn't really my quarantine experience, so you know, I can like be at a distance. This is interesting to me because I have no real like personal
Spencer was home twiddling his thumbs, apparently.
Pretty much.
What about you, Amy?
If the question is of this being, again, if we're applying the outside scope of quarantine and to this movie, then yes, it is probably in poor taste. If I take off the lens of it being quarantine and apply it just as a movie based on relationships and delving into it, it gets a lot deeper than things that have come out on the topic, not just of codependency, but of toxic relationships, of narcissism, of the sadist masochist kind of, like, there's a whole bunch of things that are tried to cover in this, what is it,
almost two hours,
which it takes, it doesn't just take a strong stomach, it takes focus. There is so much verbal and emotional abuse in this movie that if you are comfortable with this, you probably need to go. Well, first off, I always recommend therapy to everybody because therapists are awesome. So hard stop there. That is like, period. Put the flag in it. But if you are like, it's fine. What he says to her, it's fine. What she says to him is it, like, she calls him out on things and she puts up barriers to try to wedge stops into the conversation.
But I think Spencer puts it well that everything that's spoken is done in a way that is not the proper way you want to speak those truths.
Well, and that's the same thing that this entire evening, couple of hours, what have you, spawns from one simple thing that she brings up at the very beginning and at the conclusion of the movie. The problem or the error has been solved, but not without a cost. And it takes them looking honestly at the relationship and their parts in both of it to realize whether they should stay together or whether they shouldn't. Isn't it the last song is called Liberation? It's
Outkast
and CeeLo Green, right? And it's talking about skirt. You're on that line. You're skirting it. You're one side. You're like right there. And so there is. If I take out quarantine and look at this as a relationship movie, and examples of, like, I know people that have been in those relationships. I was in a similar relationship for a long time, and it sucked. And finally, taking the step back and realizing, holy crap, this is not okay. This is not safe. This is not a place I should be. It takes a lot to get there, but it takes something as ridiculous as somebody shouting across the house at the table, yelling obscenities at you, eating something you've prepared, and that's all they want is to get a rise out of you so you can come back and tell them that they're wrong, so they can pick another fight with you, so they think that it's going to turn into like super hot, awesome makeup sex, because it was just really uncomfortable. And I understood, like, in both spaces, where she was coming from, what he was doing, and then in the reverse, how basically she was goading him on to finally get to an answer that she wanted, to the act, like, to reroute so she could get to what her original objective was, for him to realize it. And then she literally had to force feed him the answer to get it. And even then, by that time, he didn't really want that answer. He did it out of, I kind of feel crappy that I made you feel bad. Like, I don't...
Well, and I think one of the things to take away from this film is that both of these people are very... According to the film, both of these people are extremely mentally unhealthy.
Yes.
It's not just the one. However, the conversations do go back and forth. They each do damage to each other. It's like a lot of these particular, both of these particular individuals were worried more about their pride, and so beefed up their attack so that way they could hit the other person harder and put them down and squash the whole thing. And it seemed like this tennis match with a boulder as they're swatting it back and forth, waiting for one of them to get taken out. And it gets pretty brutal. Like, the good thing about this movie is there's no physical violence,
but you feel like they're supposed to be at every turn, right?
Yes.
Spencer,
like, because, like, there were certain points where I'm like, is he about to punch her? Because this is not great.
Yeah.
Is she about to stab him? Like, we get into that point.
Yeah. Like, the tension is palpable in this movie. You are very aware that at any moment, like, it's one of those scenes in a Western movie where it takes that one tick or that one drop of whatever and people are drawing their guns. Like, it feels like that at every opportunity that this movie can get. I mean, at one point in time, John David Washington tells her, you know, I could snap you like a twig. And I know he meant it in terms of emotionally hurting her.
No, but it was both.
But it had a weight to it that was like, you know, physically he could probably do the same thing. And I'm pretty sure the character thought that as well. They both, however, are extremely unhealthy in terms of the way they see themselves and the way they view this relationship. And it seems almost like leeches feeding off of leeches. You know, it seems cyclical in terms of they hurt each other so that they can feel better, but they're hurting each other so that they can feel better. Mm-hmm. You know, if that makes sense to you guys. And it never seems to give you that space of security or safety in this movie, because you think, like, oh, they have this kind of, like Spencer said, they have this big old fight and then they kind of go their separate ways or whatever, and then it's like, oh, well, blah blah blah, and you're like, hold up, there's still an hour left in this movie. they are not done. And then something happens, and then they get mad, and I'm going to snap you like a twig. And then they get out, and they're like, oh, okay. Okay, anything's fine. And then, like, 5 minutes later, it's like, oh, my gosh.
They both did things that really bothered me, but it was always Malcolm's aggression in his arguments that seemed to always come back to me as, like, just real, like, come on. Like, not to, like, that Marie was, like, free and clear herself, but, like you mentioning, like, eating food that she made at a table and then just yelling across the house, you're mentally unwell. I'm like, What are you doing? What is your life right now? How is this acceptable?
Yeah.
And the snapping of a twig thing while she is, like, trying to take a bath.
She's completely naked.
Yeah.
In the bathtub. And you had pointed something out, Amy.
Yes. I've pointed it out. So if we talk about clothing in relation and clothing and positioning in relation to dynamics in relationships, we see the entire time until right towards the very end, Malcolm is always fully clothed. One, he is always in some type of a jacket, as well as his shirt, his shoes, the whole shebang. She goes through varying states of trying to get comfortable, but also it's not subverting, but it's giving her less, it's creating vulnerability.
Yeah.
So when she's in the dress the first time, she's got her makeup on, she's got her lashes. Like, if you were a warrior, this would be your battle armor. You're going in. She thinks they have the first fight. She thinks she's solid. She goes into the bathroom. He goes outside, has his entire thing. And the one thing he comes back with is she called him mediocre of everything, of everything in that conversation of what she said about how he made her feel. She said he was mediocre and that's the only thing he couldn't handle. Yeah. And then he comes back in and she's in the tub, just in there. And first off, she can't leave. He's in front of the door. He's created spacing and blocking where he starts his, I could snap you like a twig. You're a featherweight. I do want to hurt because I'm going to hurt you. Like, literally emotional attack from the end of the tub.
Not to mention the way that tub is positioned, it is in the center of that area. She's not near a wall. She's not near a window. She's not near where the towel is so she can reach out and just grab it. That tub ultimately makes her a literal island unto herself.
Yep.
And when he comes into that room, his presence, his demeanor kind of just envelops around her and, you know, corners her in this small space. And then he proceeds to berate her.
And then tell her, which is he berates her, he emotionally and verbally abuses her, and then he tries to do a version of gaslighting on her and manipulation, which is he says that they go over the person in the movie that she has said, oh, I see myself in that person. You took my story. That's what you think the entire, like, all the fights have been about, is that he's taken her story. She can't tell her story. She's upset. She wants him to say sorry for that. And he says, he breaks down, which is one of the most brutal, completely just no situations. She's in the tub, and then he starts talking about everybody else before her, everybody else that influenced this, all those moments that you see, this is what they were never you. And then he gets to the pièce de résistance, where he tells her,
before you say that, the first thing, so one thing we need to preface, the very very first thing that sets her off, the first thing that she gets upset about, is that he forgot to thank her in his speech. After presenting the film, he apparently gave a speech, apparently thanked everybody, including his third grade teacher, and forgot to thank her, which that rolls into a white blah, 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 and I'm sorry, and her assuming, or her stating that the film wouldn't have been a success if it hadn't been based on her life.
It wouldn't have been as good if I hadn't been there. If we hadn't been together, it wouldn't succeed. If it hadn't been my story that you stole.
So to preface,
so that's what you're kind of rolling in at. So the character, he's saying that it's not her except for this one thing right at the end that makes it a tragedy, that she hates herself so much that she can't allow anybody in, and the people that truly love her she can't accept. And then he starts crying, he's at the end of the tub, he starts crying a little bit and tells her, I love you. And then he adds all the reasons why he loves her, which has nothing to do with that he loves her for her. It's, I love your mind. I love the way you see the world. I love, he takes apart the I love you and parcels it out into bits of her person. And then when he finally decides to leave, she's sitting there in the tub.
Well, and even before that part, before that part, I personally feel like one of the biggest stabs and attacks to Zendaya is when he says all these other women's names and all these other people that contributed to making up the character of Imani, which is his lead character in his film. He ultimately says at the end, he said, he goes, and actually I should have thanked so-and-so who died because she took a bottle of pills or whatever, but I should thank her because this film is actually more based on her life. I should have thanked her in the speech. And that's a complete backhand to everything that has been built up to this point for Zendaya. And then the topping on this crap Sunday was...
Well, there's that. And then also he goes, you are not the first person that I... The first broken person that I have dated, that I have slept with, whatever. So you're not special. What makes you unique is you're a drug addict. Like... I was just like, he pulled no punches, and she, while not always having tact, she pointed out things.
Yeah.
But it's literally, it is an emotional tirade that you're watching. And the funny thing is that the symbolism of the bathroom in this consistently was not lost on me. For people that don't feel safe, they try to find the smallest room or one of the smallest rooms with an exit and some type of a comfort. And the entire time that we see her by herself, if she's not in the doorway taking a smoke, and then he freaks out because she's not there and he starts calling his name or calling her name, she's in the bathroom. She undresses in the bathroom, like all the times. She's in the bathroom trying to psych herself up so that she can go out there. She's hiding in the one space where she feels comfortable, and she thinks that she can control it just outside of his reach.
Well, and that makes sense in the first place at the very beginning of the movie, where she actually leaves the house, wanders, and apparently goes bathroom or pee by a tree. And like, he's by the bedroom, and it seems like she doesn't want to go to the bathroom yet. She'd rather wait until she has more of a space between him and her. And I thought that was very interesting. That was a very interesting choice, because it's not mentioned again after that. You know, it took me a little bit to figure that one out, but it was like, I was like, oh, maybe she's like relapsed and she's got drugs over by the tree or something. No, it's about space. It's about giving that opportunity of having it, some sense of security, even if it's one you have to make yourself. And recognizing that she couldn't do that anymore after that. She couldn't step away or whatever. She used the bathroom. You know, it's a very interesting choice. And I do agree with you, Amy. I think that's definitely what was going on in the movie. As the film builds... I'm sorry, were you...
No, it's just literally like there's so much emotional weight and verbal weight. And I'm going to keep using it because it is what it is. It's abuse.
Yeah,
it is abuse across the board. You are literally watching abuse that has been sanctioned with art to tell you that it's okay. And it's not okay. Abuse in any form is not okay, period. I don't care if it's for art reasons or otherwise. In watching this, it was very, very hard for me. And I continued through, not because I was like, oh, it's beautiful and I want to watch it, but because I wanted to see personally how I had changed from the last time I had measured when I had been in a situation similar. Am I doing the same patterns that she does? Have I done anything that he does? Do I fight fair? Do I fight dirty? Like, in any relationship, I look at things that are placed in front of me and I use them as a mirror. And this was the recognition of a place that I had been at and where I had improved. And some things where I realized, okay, there's a pattern. Like when he was getting his... they just found the review and he was like freaking out. He's like, I can't find my wallet. Like, and he was just swearing in panic, run swearing to try to control. Occasionally I do that, I'll be honest, but I don't do as much swearing.
It's very true.
So I lost my phone that one time and he was there. I was like, scary. I don't know where it is. That was like a little bit of space for humor, but there wasn't even when they play the innocent, you know, Coltrane's In a Sentimental Mood on the couch, and you think you're like, oh, it's going to be over. It's not over. It's never been over. It's, they're playing this constant game of manipulation back and forth, and it's who has the bigger stick at the end and who's bleeding more.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can only handle so much of that.
Who essentially says uncle at the end, you know.
But yeah, it's go before I start saying things and I'm just like, this is.
Well, and so this film culminates in a lot of emotions, and it gets to a point to where, and this is what I was mentioning earlier, 3/4 of the way into the movie, you finally think, all right, I think think it's going to be okay. All right. And they seem to be in a good mood. They seem to be kissing, seem to be loving on each other. And it's like, okay, all right, cool. You know? And he goes, oh, I have to go pee. I'll be right back. And I'm like, no, don't go. Don't. And he's like, he's trying to reinforce the vibe of the moment. He's like, stay positive, think positive thoughts. He's telling her. And he goes, and when he comes back, she poses another question that really kind of hits home for her, that creates another conversation. But instead of, and this was the conversation that I realized it solidified in my mind. Everything else had been like, okay, both of them need help. But it was this conversation right here that said, ooh, you are a gaslighter. You are somebody who, no, thank you. And it was the conversation where she asked, you know, why didn't you cast me for this role? We had both worked on this and wrote it together, and I thought you wrote it for me so that I could play. Mm-hmm. And he gives excuse after excuse, and he gives reason after reason, and then ultimately gets defensive. And it's like, no, why are you, no, that's not how you do this. You don't say, well, it's because you were doing this and that, when that has no relevance to the situation. If she decided to step away from acting, but you said this is for her, then offer her that opportunity to come back and do. There was just so much in that conversation that I was like, you need to go for a drive. Like, just leave. Like, he made me so disgusted in that character from that moment forward because of that conversation. Everything else was gross and disgusting. I'm like, yeah. But this one was like, it wasn't even presented in a defensive way. It was not like, well, you did this or that. It was like, why didn't you cast me? Simple. It wasn't even like, she goes, can I ask you something without you hurting me? I think she said.
Without making me feel like essentially trash.
Yeah. And it's like,
honestly, it was the question, it was asked from a space of vulnerability. And it wasn't even going, tell me an excuse for why I wasn't good enough. It was, tell me what your reason was behind it.
Yeah.
And it was such a moment of vulnerability.
And it created an opportunity for honesty. Like, to be fully transparent, this could have, if this was any other like situation, if this is a relationship, whatever, I would have said, this is a great time to be honest and just be forthright and say, look, we went with her and this was my reason why, and I'm sorry, and
I didn't mean to hurt you.
I didn't mean to hurt you. Like, that should have been the route. But instead it was defense after defense, reason after reason, putting it back on her. Well, this is why I didn't cast you, because you were doing this and that, or you were doing that and that. And it's like, no. And it pushes her to a point that kind of pivots the story for me. It essentially lifts the movie out of itself and says, all right, we're playing Russian roulette. It's going to go in any direction from here, because he steps out and comes back, or she steps out and comes back, and she has that knife that we had been seeing. Mm-hmm. And the whole scene where she is like, she says, you know, she's relapsed and that she's stolen from his mother and that she's had sex with his friends. And she doesn't even feel bad. And you're like, where is this going? Oh, my God.
And she's tapping the knife on the ground. Yeah. Or running it like right underneath her hair against her neck and her arms. So you can't tell if she's going to hurt herself
or
she's going to hurt him.
And then she's like, where are the pills? And I'm like, what is going on? And in this moment, I kind of had a flashback to a movie I saw back in 2016 called A Bigger Splash. It was kind of an independent film. starring Tilda Swinton and Ralph Fiennes and Dakota Johnson and everything. But I say that because that movie seems like, oh, they're just these two people, these two couples or whatever that are kind of hanging out in Greece and blah, blah, blah. It's the one I mentioned to you, Amy, about the rock star who loses her voice.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Well, I just saw the trailer. That was it, Spencer. I swear.
I'm about to ruin it for both of you. Oh, so
okay. People be sleeping with people.
Oh, yeah. Tilda Swinton is there with her boyfriend, who is much younger. Ralph Fiennes, who is her manager, shows up with his daughter. And Ralph Fiennes and Tilda Swinton used to have a relationship.
Dun, dun, dun.
And she tells her boyfriend not to worry about it. But Ralph is like, he does not understand boundaries. And he is like, touchy, touchy. And so 3/4 of the way into the movie, her boyfriend accidentally kills Ralph Fiennes.
He did.
And he
hope
dies.
He kept his nose.
Well, he dies because he's drowned in a pool, I believe.
I hope he keeps his nose.
But what happens is that at that point moving forward, Tilda Swinton and her boyfriend decide to hide all the evidence, make sure nobody is none the wiser, and they say like, oh, he was too drunk and he slipped in the pool and hit his head and died. So I thought about that movie in this moment, and I'm like, Zendaya is about to kill this dude, and she's about to bury his body out by that tree. She was actually digging his graveyard, and he's gonna die. This man is gonna die. And the film lands right back where it is, and she's like, see, I told you I could have made your film better. I'm like, what is this? What is this? You can't play with my emotions like this. This is not how this movie's supposed to work.
Did you not see that she was monologuing as soon after she came back and she sat the
way
she sat?
Where in the world are we going to get that monologue from? That was from a movie that doesn't even exist.
Also, she was tapping that knife and it just kind of like...
freaked out,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the only reason I got to the point where she said, I've stolen from your mother, and I'm like, she's monologuing. Because when you go back... she goes into the bathroom. She puts on the kimono. She looks in the mirror. She clears her. She puts her hair back. Like, she flips it off her shoulders. She kind of shakes it out. She looks in the mirror, and it's like, okay, let's go. And so,
after that, though, she's looking in the medicine cabinet, and it looks like she's looking for pills. And I'm like,
and then she just,
oh my God, she's,
but then that's the thing, that in that moment for me, I was like, this is where she's drawn the line. This is where she's like, do you know what? Let me show you what, like, she's like, I could have gone back and I could have taken pills, because he told her at the beginning of the movie, oh, you know, you're going to just be strung out on Zanny trying to kill yourself or trying to cut your wrist with the nail scissors by the end of the night. And she, in that moment, when she closed the cabinet, she's like, no. And she gave him the you know, double finger salute and came out and scared the poop out of him. And then he's like, oh my gosh, this is the hottest thing ever. And I'm just like, okay, first off, homie, no offense, but your attempts at getting intimate with somebody whenever you feel that that's the way she's upset with you, you think that's going to work, it doesn't. Like, ever. Ever, ever. So every time she's like, he's like, oh, can I kiss you? And she's like, no, I don't care. I'm like, I've been there, and it is literally like, you just want it resolved so that if there is intimacy, that there's genuine intimacy.
Yeah.
But he's using it as a form of manipulation, and it's driving me bonkers. But the tapping of the knife, though, because she looked straight up manic, like she was about to leap across the floor and get
Which
him.
Why,
I was like, get it, girl. Get it, girl.
I had no point thought, like, I did not think this was a monologue, to be quite frank. There was nothing that indicates that this was a monologue. There was no...
too many acting classes for the intern then to understand.
No,
where
I don't think so. I do not think that you called it. I'm going to call BS on that one.
You can try again. I was being watched while I was watching this movie.
Anyway.
Dum, dum, dum,
But that leads to ultimately the final conversation between the two, as John David Washington is... aroused and excited because, you know, Zendaya really flexes on him with her acting ability. She goes to the room, sits on the bed, and he thinks everything's copacetti.
He's like, we gonna get down to business. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, nah, homie.
And it really it really kind of exemplifies the mindset that he has throughout the entire movie, because he's like, this is all I've wanted to do. Like, he's been wanting to have sex all night. Which it's like, it then any effort of resolution is muddied by his intentions immediately. And it's like, and I think the character Zendaya plays picks up on that, and that's when she kind of goes into overdrive and like, no, look, this is what it's come down to. And she lays out this incredible monologue where she tells him, you know what, this is who I've been for you, this is what I've been for you, and this is how I've been for you, and I have been here for you through all these different moments, through all these different progresses and digressions in your screenplay, in your movie. This is what, you know, the least you could have done, you know, the going back full circle to her first thing, he could have thanked her. And she lists all the things that he could have said thank you for. And it's a beautiful barrage of these like backhanded, yes, they're truths, but they are truths that hurt because it is necessary. And just unleashes on him. And it's not a yelling. It's not a screaming thing. It's not a, you know, I am going to hurt you with everything I have. It's an earnest, sincere expression of the heart as she tells him, you know, I don't feel appreciated. You know, I don't feel that you appreciate or see me, not only in the frame of your movie, but also in this relationship. And go ahead.
Well, and she points it out. She says, you are a self-involved narcissist. And like all of us who have been watching this from the beginning, when he tells her, like she comes in and we see them in complete juxtaposition, you know something's wrong. It's not even, it's palpable, and he's completely oblivious to it. And anybody that cared even a little bit about their partner would have noticed on the drive home something was wrong. Anybody who just even for a moment in coming in would have looked and seen that there was something wrong. And instead of trying to schmooze them and trying to sex them up and tell them, oh my God, you're so beautiful, baby, they would have been like, okay, hey, is something going on? Can we work on this? And it's going back to Spencer, exactly what Spencer says. Things were said and not the right way a lot of times.
Yeah. Spencer, what were your thoughts in those final scenes?
I was like, is this over now? Like, just between you two? Because honestly, I feel like one of you's gonna die if you keep it up. But like, because like, go. I like truly was just be done with this, because this is not working and just seems so draining. This was one night.
Yeah.
This wasn't even multiple nights or something.
This was a good night, apparently. This was a celebratory night.
Which is insane.
Yeah. Imagine a bad night. I gotta hide the knives. Like,
nobody's getting macaroni and cheese.
Thank God. So it's a good night. I'm just kidding.
I have access to spoons, sir. Spoons.
And I think it, after that, they are both, well, he is left in tears. She is left in this solemn, like,
she's numb. She's
numb moment.
She's done. Like,
and I think it perfectly illustrates that as they are finally getting ready for bed, and the mirror that is reflecting their reflections is compartmentalized, and in one of the mirrors you can see her, and the other one is kind of tilted and you can see him, but it's part of this design. It's not like, oh, we're gonna make this mirror look weird so everybody can see everybody. No, it is a mirror that is made up of different parts but looking in different directions, and they are never on the same mirror. And I think it's indicative to the way this film ends, like truly how it ends. I feel like the fact that they are going to bed not on the same page is indicative to the fact that this relationship needs to have space. If not dead, died, you know, it needs to be dissolved, because there are a lot of things that was said that night. There's a lot of things that was done. There's a lot of things that were intended that just illustrate how much these two need to work on themselves rather than working on their relationship as a whole. And then the movie ends with Zendaya actually walking out of the house and standing on this hill, or she's not in her bed when John David Washington wakes up, and she happens to be on this hill,
literally on at the window. So there's the frustrating thing.
Yeah,
she's on a hill that's literally, if he had stood up out of bed and looked around the room, he would have seen her straight out the window the first time.
So if he would have saw her, is what you're saying, if he would have really looked for her.
Sure. Because he literally just starts calling her name like the butthole he is. He's like, oh, where are you? Like that. Anyway, he finds her out on the hill and he goes out to her. And they're framed up in this. The windows are set up. She's in the middle of these three windows. And so she's in the middle one and he see him kind of walk across and then he joins her in the middle. And then she kind of looks like she just like shakes her head and they're having a conversation, but it ain't going that well. And then it starts playing an Outkast song. And that's how we end the movie. And we're all like,
which, mind you, this no. Outkast song, it's not like, hey, yeah, it's not, you know, it's not a really
roses.
it's a very, Bob. Yeah, it's a very solemn kind of lo-fi kind of thing. But ultimately, yeah, that's how the movie ends. And it's very nebulous. It's very ambiguous in terms of what is exactly happening at the end and how the relationship resolves. But I think all signs pointing to in the film lead to the fact that this relationship is not going to last after this night. It can't. And I don't know if there's any kind of indication from the director or from the filmmaker, the writers or whoever, if there's any indication as to how this film is supposed to end. But I mean, that's my money. Like, that's where I put my money on. The movie says it all. Wrapping this thing up, let's go and go around the table. Was there anything that really stood out to you that you really wanted to recognize or give recognition to? Let's start with Amy.
I think I've made it pretty clear that I really, really do not appreciate the fact of the trash heap of a garbage of trying to tackle emotional and verbal abuse in relationships and think that it should be not only palpable but seen as quote unquote art. And that really gigantic like situation and rant about from Malcolm about how as a filmmaker critics shouldn't be able to critique him and everything is political because you say it's political, but when I say it, it's actually art, and how he uses filmmakers and artists interchangeably is kind of frustrating. I hear some of the good points. I hear the bad points. Also, I really don't want to hear In a Sentimental Mood by John Coltrane anymore, because now this has just tarnished it in such a nasty way
for me. It has tainted the song for you, huh? That sigh says it all. What about you, Spencer? Was there any moment in the film or anything that you wanted to highlight?
No, I think we've covered pretty much everything that this movie has to offer.
There you go.
It's a fire of trash.
I think one thing just to really quickly note, I do have to admit, one of the things you had mentioned, Amy, about him going off about the political industry of you know, writing reviews and everything, which just happens to be our industry here, how it's politicized and blah, blah, blah. There are several points in this movie where I question the seriousness of the director. And I think that's what kind of frustrates me a little bit more about this movie, with such a strong subject and a very strong performance in doing what they did in this movie in terms of like the dynamic between the two. The insertion of like certain things where it seems like the movie is becoming self-referential and it's talking about how, oh, you know, and it's always like this because if you get a white person doing a review of a black movie, then it's got to be politicized. It's always about politics, whatever. I just wanted to make a movie. It's like, no, but it's not that. However, this is a black movie that is speaking on things that are politicized and are socially taboo, which then makes it a point of conversation. Exactly what he said, that not every black movie has to be. There are several points where it really does reference itself in some sense of the way, and it kind of frustrated me because I think without it, I would have taken the first half, if not the first three quarters of the movie, a little bit more seriously. But because of those scenes, and it happens twice, once when that happens and the second time when he does that rant with the review, mm-hmm. and it's like, I don't know if I can take this movie seriously. Like, what are you trying to show me here? Are you trying to show me two people who are deeply emotionally and mentally unstable and need help? Or are you showing me a movie that is trying to be a parody in itself by referencing itself throughout the whole movie and how it's negating everything it's trying to do in this movie as obsolete because the characters in the movie don't see that, or the main character, one of the main characters, does not see that as a high value item in film altogether? And I'm like, I don't know how to perceive this. And I think it was doing too much by the filmmaker, and it reached a little too far off in terms of trying to land this plane, and it just kind of pulled me out at those points. I didn't really kind of fully seriously engage in the film until that knife scene, to be quite frank, or the scene right before that when he comes back from the restroom. But everything else after that, it's like everything before that, it's very, very, very fragile with me. Like, I don't know if I could believe that there's weight to anything that was said prior to that because of those statements.
Well, and there's also the one little line that you totally reminded me of because it was in that situation, was that the Zendaya brings up that actors and actresses, you know, they play pretend and dress up all day. Nobody wants to hear about your political stance. They just want you to keep doing what you're doing, keep playing dress up, and keep doing that and living that fantasy daydream life, but nobody wants to hear about what your actual opinions are. And I was like, that is a big swipe at actors and actresses who use their celebrity for good or for evil to go political. But I was like, a lot of the older actors, like the person, I thought of Mandy Patinkin, I thought of Billy Crystal, I threw in Carol Kane, I thought of people who use celebrity, especially the older actors and actresses who use it for good, and telling them, we don't care about what you want or what or Mark Ruffalo was another one, but we don't care about what you're putting out there, your political stance, keep pretending to be my favorite superhero, and that's what you need to, like, it was a shut up, sit down kind of line in there, and I was like, okay, this is, I don't, okay.
And that's coming from Zendaya.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very interesting statement to make, especially with her being the person who we're supposed to sympathize more in this film. This was a very complex movie, and it did create a lot of emotions and so forth within us. So let's wrap this up with going around the table. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? Let me start with Spencer. Yes, I am starting with you.
This is hard because, like, there's lots of things I do like, but there's also a lot of things I don't like. I'm a big fan of the acting. I thought they both did a good job in, like, portraying, like, these messed up people that we're stuck with for 2 hours. But on the flip side of that, I was stuck with two people that I did not really like for 2 hours.
Two characters.
But they were two people. I always applaud that, and it's something I've told, as long as Eddie has known me, I love and appreciate an actor who can make me feel those characters are real. And mm-hmm. if I hate them to high heaven, they've done their job.
Yeah.
And so it's either you hate them or I love them. And so I'm like, they're people. At the end of the day, yes, they are characters in this movie, but those people on screen, oof, them's peoples. Yeah.
So this movie passes as a movie, but it's also a great, you know, story of, hey, don't do any of this because you will go nowhere fast. As for a rating, man, like, for on a relationship advice level, this is a 0. Do none of this. As, you know, just a movie altogether, I guess I'm going to land on, like, a 3 because, like, I wouldn't recommend this for everyone.
Especially 100%.
Based on, like, you know, this could be triggering for some people. But I think for me, it was at least interesting to see.
Okay. What about you, Amy?
So I have figured out a way to get around this whole debacle. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
This movie, on the technical of movies, passes. But as relationships, 100%, this is a go back to your optometrist, try to get bifocals, like don't even play. But it gives, as a movie, I give it 3 broken monocles, because there is no way that you can look at this movie and see it clearly without it either one scarring you or being completely warped. So that is...
That's a really good way to put it. I actually do appreciate that.
Steal that for the future.
Feel free to, because I was like, oh man, I want to give Spencer broken monocles, because then we're like, yes. It's like invisible. If you went back and looked at your, I haven't finished the episode, but your Invisible Man, when I'm like, is it broken monocles, regular monocles? What are we going on? Yeah,
so in terms of my thoughts, the film passes as a film. It does achieve everything that you want it to do. It's got unique and very engaging characters. It's got a very interesting premise, and the film has pretty good like dialogue in terms of execution of it. In terms of the how many monocles I'm going to give it, I'm going to honestly have to give it 2 monocles. One for Zendaya and one for that tree standing tall out in the backyard.
There's because, a couple of them, but the one she pees at is very nice.
Because those are the only 2 that actually hit home for me that I really wanted to see more of. This movie is just so hard to watch and engage in and enjoy, because that's the purpose of movies. We are to enjoy them, learn something. Yeah, we can. But ultimately, the movie is supposed to be an experience. It's supposed to be an opportunity where we see a part of somebody's world or a opportunity to explore emotions that we probably are unable to experience on our own, or we have and it reminds us. This is one of those opportunities where I really don't want to experience that. I don't want to revisit that. I don't want to feel that, whether now or in the future. And unfortunately, this movie really kind of put a sour taste in my mouth in terms of relationship movies. I'm not a big, romantic movie type person, but there are certain ones that really do resonate well with me. And this is one of those movies that I don't think I can revisit, because everything that I got out of it was very, very much something that I don't even want to know how to get. Like, I don't want to know how to get to Sesame Street for that one. You know, that can just stay off in God knows where. I do not want to see it again.
Broken monocles. Told you.
So, but I have to admit, Zendaya knocked it out of the park for me. I have to say kudos to that child, that woman, that person, because she is not a child and she's definitely not a kid in this movie. She brings it. She definitely delivers. And I believe without a doubt that she can hold her own toe-to-toe with the greats out there in terms of Hollywood. So, yeah. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out at our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check out our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. This is a really interesting and kind of poignant conversation, and thankfully we won't have to revisit this particular film again. But honestly, if you're planning to go see it and you do struggle with any of these things, whether if it's, previous relationship abuse, verbal abuse, any kind of mental gaslighting, anything that you feel could be triggered, just play it safe and just don't see this movie, because it's not worth the almost 2 hours of watching 2 people obliterate each other's souls in this movie. But I mean, hey, if you want to check it out, if you want to see it, if you want to know what it all entails and see if you can honestly stomach it, I mean, by all means, check it out. It's on Netflix now, Malcolm and Marie. But like I said, that gives us another great opportunity, another great show. Sorry. And from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm going to therapy intern Amy.
Class dismissed.